Bailey, and good afternoon to everyone, and happy Sabbath. It is good to be here with everyone, and that song was quite, he might not have known it, but that was quite fitting. If you can't remember anything I say, remember that song, because that's a pretty good recap of what I want to talk about. You'll see as we go through the sermon here, a lot of things as we were singing them, I was thinking, boy, that fits in very, very nicely. But one of the things we're all going to have to adjust to next week at the new hall is our seating assignments, right? When I look, especially when you're a speaker, you look out, you know exactly where certain people sit, right? But we're all creatures of habit, and I'm sure probably in about 2 weeks, we'll have it all figured out, and everyone will be in their assigned seats, and we'll be ready to go. It'll be good, it'll be interesting, it'll be a new adventure, so I know we're all looking forward to that, and start a new journey next week. And I know it's almost in one sense, it's now we finally got the PA system working. Are you here now? So, going to miss that. No, but the sound system guys have done a remarkable job getting that. And depending, some weeks it was good to miss some words, I guess, but other times when you wanted to hear it, it was a little different. But no, great job in getting all that done, but looking forward to next week as well. Sometimes when you read certain things, as we read certain things in the Bible, obviously certain things really stand out, especially as you hear things and they say stop or consider or woe to someone, or Jesus says this is very, very important. It makes us or should make us stop and really sit up and take notice. And so many times we think about our lives as Christians, you say, what is it all about? What are we supposed to be doing? What is God's will for us? What should we as Christians be doing? What does God want? Sometimes they say, what is God's will for us? Well, let's turn to Matthew the 23. Just want to read something here that will give us the foundation of what I want to speak about. Matthew 23 is quite a scathing chapter if you were on the wrong side of who Jesus was talking to, which was the Pharisees. And he goes through a number of harsh rebukes against them for what they were doing in many, many different ways, in many ways in how they were practicing their various brands, their brand of religion. And he talks about many different things, and he comes down in Matthew 23 into verse 23, and he says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you're full of extortion and self-indulgence. Like a bad review from your boss, right? This is really bad what he's saying here. He's indicting the Pharisees. Blind Pharisees, cleanse first the outside. That the outside may also be clean. Woe, you hypocrite. So he goes on and says that they are basically practicing an outward religion. Good appearances, but inside they're dead. There's no spirit that is of Jesus Christ. And he says in verse 23, he talks about the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. Weightier in the sense because these should be, need to be, the underpinnings of who we are as Christians. You think just say, this is what Jesus was preaching about, exhorting about near the end of his life. In the chapter before that, he said there's two great commands, right, in chapter 22. Love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as well. You think about justice and mercy. Is that not direct application of loving your neighbor? And how do we express in many ways our love to God? It's through our faith. Through our faith. Faith is a huge topic. Huge topic. This afternoon I want to carve a small slice off that massive topic. Because any one of these three, justice, mercy, faith, could be a series. When Jesus says these are the weightier. This is what's really, really important. This is what I'm looking for. This is a sign of someone who has my spirit. Not someone who professes outwardly to do things, but inside they're a hypocrite. They're dead inside. They don't have any life. They don't have my spirit. I want a person who practices justice, and mercy, and shows great and lasting faith. So this afternoon, I want to just chip away a little bit at that massive topic of faith. There's so many different aspects to it. But I want to take us back. I want to take us back to a book in the Old Testament. And that book is Habakkuk. Habakkuk. Oh, I see excitement in the crowd. Contain your excitement now. Habakkuk. Now, that's a book. Now, I'm going to start out by saying there's two accepted pronunciations for that as well. Habakkuk or Habakkuk. I don't want to cause an internal rift here, so I will accept either pronunciation. But again, it's a book. It's a book that you could easily overlook. It's a book that you may spend the rest of the sermon time trying to find. It's a book that you may not necessarily even really think, why would we even go? It's like if you were asking for directions and you were trying to get somewhere, they would say, yeah, you go past Habakkuk, it's on the end. Oh, then you get to Malachi, right? Or you go to Jonah, then Habakkuk's along the way. It's just a spot in between, right? I actually looked up, they said in 2014, there were less than five boys who were named Habakkuk. Found that surprising? No, not really, right? His pronunciation would always be back and forth, right? So it's really unknown. And as you, if you read anything on commentaries, they say it's probably the least known author of a book that we have in the whole Bible. You're not going to find much about this person. You're not going to find a whole lot. It's three chapters. Three small chapters tucked away in those minor prophets. But a big, big story is the story of faith. And I want to walk through this afternoon just briefly the faith of Habakkuk and what we can learn from that, what we can take from that. Because it's funny, every time, look what we heard in the sermonette, you hear in the announcements, we are constantly, our faith being tested. Right? In this world, faith is a sought after, a difficult commodity, one we must grow in as Christians. And you think about faith, we probably can't spend too much time trying to understand or look in the Bible or look more for it, because what Jesus says, this is a weightier matter. We want to know about that. And I will just say that Habakkuk, if you look at that name in the Hebrew, it means, and we'll get into this a little bit, it means to embrace. It means to fully embrace. And one of the aspects means to, like, wrestle. To wrestle with. And you'll see in this book, a wrestling with God. Wrestling. Or as one beloved of God, or as a comforter of people. That's what that name means. We don't know much about the person. I thought about doing a slideshow, but I thought, put up a prophet there and call him Habakkuk, because you wouldn't know any different, right? We don't have much, but we know what that name means, and it's a very, very important thing when we think about embracing and wrestling and grappling with God when we think of our faith, right? When you think of faith, there's different starting points. Habakkuk is going to take us from, I would say, intermediate to graduate work. That's where we are this afternoon. That's where we need to be. As you hear some of the statements, as you hear how he, it's really interesting, the first chapter of that book, it's a conversation back and forth between Habakkuk and God, Habakkuk and God in chapter. You don't get that very often. It's a really interesting piece of scripture that we are privileged to. I'll just give you the dates of when it was thought this book was written. Again, it varies somewhat, but the general consensus is that it was sometime around 627 B.C. to 605 B.C. For those of you young ones doing the math, that's about a long time, right? About 2,600 years. It's amazing. It's hard for us even to grasp what we talking about. It was a long time ago. So let's go to that book. And again, I'll give you a few minutes to get there. It is in the Old Testament. It's after Daniel. Narrow it down. After Micah, Nahum, then you find stop. Good. Habakkuk, the first chapter, it says here, the burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw. And he says in verse 2, O Lord, How long shall I cry and you not hear? Even cry out to you violence, and you will not save. Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. And therefore the law is powerless and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, therefore perverse judgment proceeds. He's talking to God and saying, God, how long will you stand by while evil is all around us? It's said there at the very start, it's called the burden. That word burden means to lift something up. Troubles were heavy. Matters that had to be dealt with. They had to be taken up by somebody. And this is what Habakkuk was doing. There was a great burden. There was a great trouble that moved his spirit because of the evil that was there in Judah at the time. And he's asking God, he's very troubled by this, and he says, God, how long will you stand by while your law is trampled? While the people continue to sin? It was a bad time in Judah. The kings were making alliances with, the king of Judah was making alliances with nations around them. They were defying the prophets. There was sin in the tabernacle. He was heavy in his soul when he saw this, and he asked God, God, why do you stand idly by? Now, at this point, when I say we're not at the beginning stages of faith, if we were to turn to Hebrews 11, verse 6, it says, it's impossible to please God without faith. And if you come to him, you must believe that he is. Right? That would be the starting point if we were to say, what's the faith class before Habakkuk? It's faith 101, and at some point we got to have someone to have faith in. Right? We got to believe that there's a God. And that's what's written in the book of Hebrews. That's the starting point. He's not at this spot. He's at a spot where he fully believes in God, fully understands who he is, but is struggling with the fact that there's so much evil around him. And again, we'll get to how this fast forwards 2,600 years to us in a little bit. But your mind should also hopefully be thinking the same way as you think about life and society today. Right? As we look around and he's saying, how long will you let this persist? How long will you let this evil from our leaders go before you act? God, I know who you are. Why would you not do something about this? There was a burden as a prophet. Because he saw his people and the separation from God, and he wanted God to step in and do something. Change the situation. Let's drop down to verse 5. I said that was Habakkuk talking to God. In verse 5, this is God responding back to him. God says, look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe though it were told you. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and nasty nation, which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards, more fierce than evening wolves. Their chargers charge ahead. Verse 9, they all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sands. They scoff at kings. They deride every stronghold. They heap up earthen mounds and seize it. Then his mind changes and he transgresses. He commits offense, ascribing this to the power of his God. God said, something's going to happen here. I know what's going on. Something's going to happen. I'm going to raise up this bitter and nasty nation. And they're going to bring some really bad things to the nation. That's what I'm going to do. So here is Habakkuk wanting to get an answer. This is what God comes back with. Now it's interesting. It's hard for us to grasp this fully. The time period and who were the ruling nations and who was in power at the time. As I said, most people think this book was written around, he wrote this around 612 BC. Here's a couple events on how quickly the world seen and the power changed, because God said, he said, something's going to happen that's so astounding, you wouldn't believe it if it was told to you. At that time, Assyria was really the ruling power. They were really the dominant force, and when we had time, we would talk about everything they did, but they were quite oppressive, how they dealt with the nations that they captured. But in 612 B.C., Nineveh, the capital of Assyria, was utterly ransacked to the point where people forgot where it was. The Babylonians and the Medes overran Assyria. Again, something that was unthinkable at the time. Again, think in terms of today. When we think about world powers and the shifting and the things that could happen and how they move, God was saying behind the scenes, here's what I'm going to do. That was in 612. In 609, Josiah, y'all remember Josiah, the boy king, who did so many wonderful things in reforming the law, the temple, and restoring God's law. Well, he sided with the Babylonians against the Egyptians, and he was killed in battle, and that's how he died in 609. Egypt was a world power. In 605 B.C., Egypt was totally crushed by the Babylonians. In 605 B.C., Daniel, we know the book of Daniel, right? Daniel now was taken captive to Babylon. Judah became a vassal state, and Jeremiah, who was a contemporary, Habakkuk, in Jeremiah 29, verse 10, you can just jot it down, he foretold of 70 years of captivity for the nation of Judah. They would go to Babylon, 606 to 536, before they came back with Ezra and started rebuilding the temple. Now, I know Mr. Cox would tell me one of those years. One of those numbers have to be a jubilee, but that's for another topic. But in that little span of time, you're talking from 612 to 605, in that period where he was writing, the whole world seemed unraveled, changed, and was turned upside down, something we can't fully appreciate, but again, something again that God was working behind the scene. God was working this out, and he said, I have seen. Habakkuk, you're coming to me saying, where are you? Why do you let this persist? I've seen that, and I'm going to bring the Chaldeans, who were part of the Babylonian Empire, I'm going to bring them in. And they're going to do some pretty rough things to the nation of Judah. Going to take them away captive and change the whole landscape of the world. Right? But Habakkuk, he gets his answer, right? He's fully satisfied. As we would be, as we see things, we go, wow, okay, it was really bad, but now you're going to bring in some really bad people and they're going to take us away. Now I really, God, what is going on? Right? So drop down to verse 12. This is Habakkuk answering back to God. God, are you not from everlasting? O Lord, my God, my Holy One, you are the everlasting one, God. And because of that, we shall not die. I know you have appointed them for judgment. O Rock, you have marked them for correction. I know there will be a time when your judgment and correction will come upon them. For your eyes are pure. Your eyes are too pure to behold evil. And you can't look on wickedness. Why then do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? Why are you bringing in people who are worse than us to punish our nation? God, how can you do that? You're too pure. Again, he's grappling with God. Remember his name, embrace, to wrestle. This is a part of the faith walk. I'm again slicing off a sliver. This is where someone goes back. We go back to God and try to understand, God, how could you bring in these people? They're really, really bad. We'll talk about the modern day and how we view things as well. But he's saying, God, how could this be? Look what he says in verse 14. Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take them all up in a hook. They catch them in their net. He's talking about these nations that just sweep in and overrun nations. Therefore, they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet. They are worshiping themselves and their power and their greatness and what they're accomplishing. And you're going to let them come in and do that? This is a bad people. God, why is this working this way? Verse 17, shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? God, don't you see this? Don't you understand? Why would you now allow these people to come in and take over our nation? I know we have some bad things here, but this was not the answer I expected. This is not what I thought you would come back with. You would punish us in this way. They're a brutal and savage people. They don't knock at the front door and have a limo out front, take you to a nice place. No, God, these people are going to come in and ravage our nation. Imagine the burden now that he feels. What does he do about it? What do we do when we're at that crisis spot? God has given his answer. And we look and we wonder, we go back to God and say, God, how could this be? God, how can you tolerate this evil? Can you look upon this? Because I know you are the eternal one who separates himself from evil. How would you allow this? First chapter 2. Chapter 2 and verse 1. Well, after he gets his peace out, Habakkuk, in verse 2, he says, I will stand my watch, set myself on the rampart, and watch to see what he will say to me, and what I will answer when I am corrected. A pretty good attitude. Now he says, I'm going to go to a spot, I'm going to sit, I'm going to wait. That word rampart, it's like a watchtower. You can read a lot about that in the Old Testament. We know when that watchtower is used, it's a very vigilant spot where you go and you wait and you look. Almost like a young child in the window waiting and expecting for someone to come. You're very geared, you're watching, you're intent. Right now he's sitting here waiting for God to respond and says, you know what, God? You are eternal, you are great. I am sitting here waiting to be corrected. This is how I'm seeing everything. This is what I'm seeing in my limited view, God. I don't understand this. I've taken it to you. Help me to see it. I'm probably going to be corrected, but I will sit, I will wait to get my answer from you. But God responds in verse 2. The Lord answered me and said, write the vision, make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come, will not tarry. He told Habakkuk to write down some things that were going to happen so that whoever reads it may run and tell the news of this coming invasion of the Chaldeans. But more than that, as we'll read in the second chapter, you can even look at verse 14. It talks about a prophetic time. The earth will be filled with the glory of the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. That's prophetic. When the kingdom is fulfilled. So he's saying, write this down, because even though it seems like it's a way off, it will happen. Even though it seems like it tarries, my plan will come to pass. There will be a conclusion that you will see in its fullness. And we come down in verse 4 to what I would say is a very famous verse. It's a verse that's quoted 3 times in the New Testament. It's a very pivotal verse. We talk about faith. We get to a spot in a road like this where everything seems contradictory. We know who God is. We see what's unfolding. When we're told to wait, when we don't understand fully, what does God say in verse 4? Behold the proud. His soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. The just shall live by faith is what God is saying. He's saying, behold the proud. His soul is not upright. It's not upright. It's not straight. There's a twisted spirit in a person who's apart from God. What he's saying, it's not the just will or should try, but the just shall. The just are commanded to live by a faith. A faith that, in spite of everything that seems contrary to what seems to be God's hand working something else, produces a steadfastness, a sureness in how we live. That word faith in the Hebrew means like firmness, steadfastness, fidelity, steadiness. It's related to the word amen that we say at the end of a prayer when we confirm the truth of something. When we have faith, we are trusting that something is true and reliable. We rest confidently, steadfastly in what God says because we are convinced he is trustworthy. Because something is true, we live by faith. That's what God is saying here, is saying that his word is very much telling us that there is something that's happening in the now with the proud. And if we read the rest of chapter 2, which we won't go into, but it lays out 5 woes of what is going to happen to these people now that God is just using them. to bring punishment to Judah. But they have been filled in their own selves. We heard about idols. We talked about them making themselves an idol. And he's saying here, the proud, the end of the proud is death. The end of the proud, they don't have a future. But God is saying that the just shall live by faith. The just shall truly, as we heard in the sermonette, shall truly embrace God and our reliance on Him and what He is doing. It is such a huge undertaking. When we think about it, we think about our lives and we think about what was happening here. If you could just think of that world scene for a moment, when you knew what was going to happen to the nation of Judah, and God said, just trust me. Walk by faith. So easy to hear, so difficult to do for all of us. So difficult, I'm sure, for Habakkuk at this time when God told him that. But that was what God commanded him to do. He says, right now, the proud, they won't always exist. And that's what we spend the rest of chapter 2 talking about, that won't always be the case. Verse 14 is prophetic. There's a vision there that talks looking forward to Jesus Christ and the ultimate fulfillment of victory. But it's in the future. And though it tarries, wait for it. Wait for it. What he is told. Turn to Deuteronomy 29, verse 29, because sometimes we want to know more. We think we need to know more from God, but God gives us what we need to know. Look at Deuteronomy 29 and verse 29. First it says, the secret things belong to the Lord our God. The secret things belong to God. We don't know everything. We don't see everything. Some things God holds back for himself. But those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. Sometimes we don't see it fully. We don't understand what is happening. And God says, wait. It seems like it's a long way off, but the just shall live by faith. If we go into the last chapter here, in chapter 3, it's actually a psalm, and it's written very much as a psalm, as a song here at the end. But this is where now, after Habakkuk has the vision and writes it down, he praises God for who he is and what he is doing. In verse 2, he says, at the end of that verse, he says, in your wrath, remember mercy. God, he talks here about God's greatness, the wonder of God and who he is and what he does, because he realizes God is doing something that's greater than he is. And I think you get to the end of chapter 3, we drop down to really what I would say, like I said, this starts out probably intermediate faith. At the end of the book, this is probably graduate work, and we look at like how we would want something written about ourselves. You read these verses, 17 through 19, you say, boy, if we could get to the pinnacle of faith, we got to a spot where we really, and we know in our lives, we seem to ebb and flow a lot of times when it comes to faith and where we're put in life and what God is doing with us. But this, I thought, was a pretty good synopsis of where we want to be in verse 17. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stall, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. They use joy as a verb. I will joy in God, regardless of my circumstance, even though things don't look very positive, even though things don't look very good, even though I will joy in the Lord. I will hold steadfast. I will hold steady. I will stand strong. It's a difficult, difficult thing to accomplish as we walk through life, as he had to walk and know what was coming to the nation of Judah. Even though things don't look very good at all, he was going to find joy. So where do we take this book from 2,600 years ago. And quickly at the end here, just talk about a couple of lessons for us today. As we sit here in 2015, as we think about some of the weightier matters of the law that Jesus Christ laid out for us, and he said, you know what? There's so many important things, but growing in true abiding faith, steadfast faith, one of the most powerful things we can do in our journey as Christians, one of the things that God is requiring of us, sort of ripping our hands away from the grip we want sometimes on the things and the control that we want so desperately. What do we take from this book? Well, I think back to that first verse where it says, the burden of Habakkuk. And I think about our world today, and I think he had that burden because why? Because he saw as God saw. He understood things from God's point of view. He understood the depth of the evil that was around him. And I wonder, and I ask ourselves the question, do we as Christians carry an appropriate burden as well? As we start and begin to think more like God and have our mind wrapped by God, do we see evil? Do we understand the difficulties? Do we understand the times that we are in? Because it is so easy with our politically correct environment to have things wash over us to a point we don't realize the difference. We know you can jot it down in Isaiah chapter 5, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. A society that is becoming increasingly dark by the day, we have to have that appropriate level of not that we're like the walking version of Eeyore, right? We don't want that, but we have to understand with sobriety what is happening around us without getting into any detail at all. But I wonder if for those who have followed and heard some of the things that are happening in the Planned Parenthood world lately, there is an atrocity, a genocide that is happening right in the midst of our nation that is being widely accepted and praised. And a person is ridiculed if you even dare to push back against that. We should carry a burden because of that. And they even push back to the point where I heard comments even that they are even attacking those who are wanting to report on that and calling out their morality for wanting to report on that. That's how twisted it becomes. Calling evil good and good evil. There's a burden that goes with that as we separate more from the world, as our mind is filled more with what God would see things, how God would look at things. That these are the things that I am, every once in a while, I'll be in my car and I've had Sirius Radio recently, and sometimes I call it slipping behind enemy lines, but I'll put on like MSNBC or something, and just to hear a very extreme liberal approach, it's a mockery to God and his word, and we have to understand that and stand up for that. But I said the song was talking that we're not ashamed to stand for that in our society, because that voice, if you want to hinge anything on this book anymore and claim this as authority, you better be careful. Our society, we have to feel that burden. And I ask myself that question. Do I feel the burden as he did in here? You know, that we understand the difference between good and bad in our society. Turn over to Romans 1 and verse 20. Romans 1. Powerful chapter in the Bible we know about, but it talks about mankind. When you drift from God, when you neglect his authority, you go to a very dark spot. You go to a spot that is cut off with not a very good end at all. Look at Romans 1 and verse 20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes have been seen, are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. But because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, We have that in today's society. What does God say? What does Paul say? They became fools. It's foolishness. We have to call it for what it is. Foolishness. And change the glory of the incorruptible God. To minimize that and then turn it into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-legged creatures and creeping things. Therefore, God, what happened? He gave them up to uncleanness and the lust of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves. We now have a very base society that's removed from God because they have not recognized that authority. They've walked away from that. They become gods to themselves instead of putting our trust and our hope and our confidence and our faith entirely in God. I am very excited this fall, again, as we think in terms of the youth lessons, and we're going to try to make sure that the congregation is very tied in with it as well. Last year was very much about introducing our children the concept, really, of who is God. Right? We talk about faith 101. That's where it starts. Right? We have to build this underpinning. Right? We start, we say, who is God? What is he doing? What are his attributes? Why is he supreme? Who is Jesus Christ? We spent last year going through that. And I hope the children, their minds are enlightened and opened up, and we come away, as we should here every week, with a bigger picture of the magnitude, the supremacy, the wisdom of God. So last year we spent a lot of time on that. That's what the lessons were geared around, and the parents spent a lot of time. And this year it's moving into the next phase of, you know what, God is majestic in who he is. And guess what? God has created something that's awesome as well. And that's what he said here. If you want to look around, you will see God in creation. You will see the glory of God in creation. It's all around us. But again, we've sort of botched that up as mankind as well and have a lot of different weird ideals about how life started and that whole side of things. So what an opportunity is now to say, God in all his splendor, we have videos, show the kids, and we should stand in awe when we think about creation and the universe. We expand God. And then we build something that, you know what, I can trust in that. More than the things that are temporary that go away and these idols that get knocked over, as he talked about in Habakkuk, or as we heard in the sermon at the idols today that will save us, right? Our 401k and on and on and on. So there's no real security in any of that. We have to expand, and we'll hear more about that as that lesson rolls out. But that's what you can talk to our young people about. If you want to ever talk to one of them, ask them about God and tell them something about God that's powerful and faith-building. We need to build our faith that way. One other observation as I think about the book we just went through briefly is that, you know, God has a plan, and it will come to pass. He has a plan. You know, Habakkuk couldn't really fully see that, even when there was trouble in Judah. Even now, sometimes, I hope we all bemoan what we see in our nation, and not just our nation, but in the world in general. We say, God, what are you doing? How long will this evil persist? How long will it go on? Well, you know what? God has a plan, right? And he says, hold on. It tarries, but it will come. You know, and I look out and I think about so many people here who have been faithful, encouraging. I was a young kid once sitting out here and wondering and growing and wondering what would happen and where things would go. We had, for years, I remember trying to figure out who the Chaldeans were in Europe and who was going to come and the Babylonians. And we had our own modern version of the Risk game, right? And we still do away with a prophecy and all that and wondering, is it going to work this way? Is God going to do something? Yeah, quick it changed with Habakkuk. Scary in one sense. God is doing something. Certain things God keeps to himself. We don't see all those things, but he has a plan. We can take great comfort in that. Because I see some people who follow the political scene so closely, you can actually drive yourself sick about it. Right? If we're looking for a solution to come from this current environment, we're not going to find that. We will find it in God and say, God, help me to have reliance and faith and confidence and hitch up to you because you have a plan. You're working out something. Right? You're working out something. I was thinking, it was just, this may not relate at all, but I thought it might work. I was watching something on Yahoo the other day and they had like a Rubik's Cube competition. Does anyone not know what a Rubik's Cube is? Anyone knows what a Rubik's Cube is? pretty good. Because they were, like, big in the 80s. I don't know. But they had a competition. There was one young gentleman, I think he was a boy, 14. He did a Rubik's Cube in 5.6 seconds. Put it together. Boom, done. I'd still be looking at the colors. Which one do I like the best? Put it down for a while. 5.6, right? And I thought, you know, that's how we are. We're trying to scheme all this. He's got his plan, and he's just going to let it work. God knows. He's in control. Sometimes we are fed so many things, that voice, hard to hear. Sometimes what Habakkuk did, he went to a spot to listen, right? To wait for God, to wait for God's answer. But he has a plan. He has a plan. I also thought, too, one other thing that came out of that book is that he wrote down certain things. God gave him a vision of encouragement and a way to get through it. And we know, too, God has given us his word as a guide and to give us hope. Right? Are we there at the ready all the time with this book? Are we there to listen? You know, he went to a spot and he said, God, I'm praying to you, I'm wrestling, I'm grappling with my faith, I'm grappling with what you're doing. I'm going to go now and go wait for your answer. I'm going to spend some time away from the fray of all that we talked about this. I was talking with Big Andy before church. It's just how busy and how overrun you become. So you can't get to a spot where you can pull above the fray. It was like Habakkuk went to a spot. He said, I'm going to sit over here and just wait for God. There's peace. There's comfort when we find that time. We can do those kind of things. When we pour into his word and spend that time. I'll just give you one verse here. And I'm big on memory verses, so I'll throw this out. Maybe the kids one day will remember this one. But this is one I think that's so important. We understand what God has given to us. What do we hang on to? Right? The world has a lot of different things. They trust in business or science or technology. All these things, medicine that are going to save. This is what we hold on to. This is where we put our faith. This is where we have to find our hope. Look at 2 Timothy 3. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 15. This is Paul talking to Timothy. Isn't this, again, how we want to have a model for how we would end up when it's all said and done? He says to him, from your childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures. And some of us, that's true. For some of us, we've been raised in the church. You've known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation. What did Paul say in Romans? Wisdom of this world ends up being quite foolish. It's sold as a very wise and powerful thing. But he says, no, the scriptures are what make you wise for salvation through faith. Through faith. We're not going to be able to avoid that piece, right? It's through faith that we've got to really stretch and put ourselves out there and say, when everything else doesn't point that way, when I don't feel it, when I don't see it, when it seems like a much easier path to go down and to accept, God is saying, no, come over here. These words, have faith through my son Jesus Christ. That's what's going to lead to life. That's what's going to lead where I want you to. Because it says why? All scripture, and this is the memory verse, all scripture is given by inspiration of God. The Bible is picked and poked at in so many different ways, but says here, given by inspiration of God, is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness. Why? Just so we can get ourselves corrected and reproved from time to time. There's an end game. That verse 17, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work, that goodness would come out. In a very, very dark world, that we may be equipped to do some things that reflect the glory of God. What a great vision to have is how we live our lives. Apart from the evil, the nonsense that we see that can so easily wash over us and erode our faith. We need to be encouraging one another with faith. And the last thing I will say is from the book, as we conclude, what I say, the even though part. Even though. We read at the end of Habakkuk in verse 17. Even though stalls are empty. Even though it's hard to figure out how we're going to make it to next week, even though it just seems like our society is just getting worse, even though our health is not where I want it to be, even though that we have joy, that we have joy. What a powerful gift of the Spirit God has given to us. We need to pray for that. God, fill us with your joy, even though it's hard. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this big a book, and we wouldn't come here every week, right? We need each other, too, to encourage ourselves, one another, and share those examples of faith. I think of the fiery, we know the story of the fiery furnace with Meshach. I want to say the VeggieTale version. Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, right? Close, right? But the point is, at the end, they said, we're going to go in here, and even if God chooses not to save us, he's still God. Paraphrase. Right? But that's what he's saying. Even, it doesn't minimize who God is, because we know our circumstances aren't dependent on that. Sometimes it's hard to separate the two. I was talking to my sister recently, and she was telling me another very, very difficult story of a mother of seven, and she was having a child, an eighth child. And she actually died in childbirth. Child made it, but she died. And it was, again, a very similar, horrific story, right, of this 19-year-old girl who just recently died as well. And you think about, boy, the time when your faith is pushed to the limit. But in both cases, the husband, I heard the father, just steadfast, rock solid. Even though you've ripped out, my heart's been ripped out, and will never be the same, even though God is God. And I will stand and I'll have my trust. We sit here today in relative calm. It's at those times when God puts us on any number of paths and journeys, as people have experienced over the years. Sometimes when I think about that, you think, boy, this is hard, this is difficult. You step back and you look at some of the difficulties you in this room have experienced and have walked through and kept walking. That's encouraging. It's encouraging. That's faith building. Even though, God, I know you are God, and I will joy. Love that as a verb. I will joy in you. What a powerful testimony for us to look forward to and try to achieve. You know, I started the sermon by saying that Jesus, anytime, the whole Bible, what part do you disregard? But when it's in red, you really look at it pretty close. And Jesus said, you know what? There are some weightier matters of the law. We could spend time. Justice is a huge topic. Mercy. But faith is one that's monstrous. One that's so critical. One that is, one sometimes you think you take two steps forward and three back. Right? It's hard. That's why I think we need to share and encourage one another as we see the days and the times we live in. And to go to God. And to wrestle with him. And to embrace him as Habakkuk did. And say, God, why is this? Help me to continue to latch on to you when everything around me might say, go a different direction. And to wait on him, even though we are here to grow in that incredible, important fruit of the Spirit, faith. It's a lifelong process. God, in his mercy and his love, pulls out to us his love so we can experience that. And so whatever we face, wherever we are, that through this process, hopefully we'll see things more like God does. See it more like God does. When we start seeing it more like God does, it helps us to be a little more calm. Understand he has a plan. Understand his great love for us. And like I said, it'll be a lifetime. It takes us, it's a journey, but it's such an important, wonderful for God and his great love. Like he said, he has a plan that's going to be good for all mankind. But we need to be steadfast, firm in our holding to him. And so in the same way that he told Habakkuk at a very, very difficult time, and again, I try to, as much as I can, put yourself mentally into those spots. We told him what would happen. A very ruthless nation would destroy and take Judah captive 70 long years. A long time. Same thing he told him. Wherever we are, whatever situation we are experiencing, whatever difficulty we have, that we go to God we latch to him. And always remember the same thing he told Habakkuk to guide our lives. Just shall live by faith.